Welcome back to the web bonus of Art Speak. I'm joined by Carlton Mackey, creator of 50 Shades of Black. And right now we're just talking a little bit about Carlton's background. What's your background in art, and really how did you find yourself in Atlanta?
Thank you for asking. My background in art started with writing. My first love was writing, and it was affirmed, kind of my skills, if you will, as a writer were affirmed at a young age. And I won a series of poetry and writing competitions throughout high school and had, you know, pieces featured in a couple of young national writing competitions. And toward the end of high school, I picked up a Canon AE-1, which is a amazing camera that is film, unlike the DSLR that I have now. And it was in my dad's closet. He had bought it from a friend, and he didn't use it. It was just something that he wanted to maybe explore with. And I grabbed it at 16 and haven't stopped shooting.
That's awesome. You just talked about photography. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a good lead in to talk about your photography team, My True Vision. When was that established, and what has been going on with that recently?
My True Vision Photography as a name and as a kind of an entity started in college. I'm a Tuskegee University graduate, and I took that camera that I was talking about to Tuskegee, and I got my first business license while I was at Tuskegee, just kind of thinking as an entrepreneur and just really loving the camera. And my first clients, if you will, were all of my friends at Tuskegee who asked me to photograph them because, you know, when you're in college, you are certainly an aspiring everything, model, actress, doctor, lawyer, whatever. And so I shot, they're floating, everyone's first photos that I went to college with are My True Vision Photography images. That's and great. I actually see some of them floating around these days.
You're a director of both the Ethics and Arts Initiative and the ESL Forum at Emory University. Can you talk a little about what those programs offer and really what it means to be directing those types of programs?
Yes. I started off at the Center for Ethics about 7 years ago, and I accepted a position to be the assistant director of the Ethics and Servant Leadership Program. That's the EASL program that you're talking about. And the EASL program is a year-long program that is in two parts. It is a year-long academic forum that explores the shaping of young leaders, and we work to help them to explore within themselves alternative modes of being and existing in the world that we hope will promote healthy dialogue both with themselves and the people that they will engage with wherever they go, whenever they leave the university grounds. Explore issues around sexuality and gender, basic leadership development, and exploration of ethics in general. And we began to explore the intersection of ethics and the arts. How can the arts be used as a tool for social exploration, social change, and how can they be used in great examples like Wonderoot and other organizations who are using the arts as a tool for doing and being and advancing our society. So that is what the forum is. We also have the EASL program has a summer internship, and we partner these young Emory students with local nonprofits, and the program pays the student and the local nonprofit gets an Emory University student to work with them on whatever their mission is. And we've partnered with fantastic Atlanta nonprofits ranging from larger organizations like CARE and CDC to organizations like Trees Atlanta, Wonderoot, the YWCA, and on and on. It is that artistic kind of sensibility and that seed that was planted through EASL for us to begin to explore the intersection of ethics and the arts that, and my own personal interest in art and passion for it, really, to be truthful, that about 3 years into the EASL program, I really took a risk, if you will, and took some initiative to start incorporating art more into that curriculum and found it to be extremely rewarding, and the students were extremely receptive to it. After a couple of exploratory trials in EASL and some highly publicized and successful events that we did at the university at large, brought a filmmaker, and we screened a HBO documentary film, and we brought the subject of the film. His name is Dan Kiplinger. He has cerebral palsy, and he's an artist, and he uses a stylus attached to his head to paint. And the documentary won an Oscar, and we brought him. And based on the success of that event and what we were able to explore by using that film alone, we were able to explore people with other abilities. We were able to explore kind of the social perception of ability and disability. We were able to explore issues about art making and general accessibility. All these things that were ethical topics that the center is about, we were able to explore them using art. And that event catalyzed what in essence became a full-blown program that now uses film certainly as a platform for that exploration. We have an Ethics on the Stage component of the Ethics in the Arts initiative, where we partner with theaters, both larger theaters like the Alliance, and we have a partnership with the Atlanta Opera, but we also partner with Horizon and Seven Stages and other local theaters. We have a new partnership with Grammy U, or the Recording Academy, developing a relationship with the Recording Academy at large, to develop an ethics and music component. Our most recent event that we had with that was with Young Guru, who's an engineer and is the engineer for 9 out of 10 of Jay-Z's albums. We had a successful event with him just last week. And then we have student-driven components and art shows and art exhibits that are both local artist and student.
Do you find that students that might not normally be immersed in the arts are drawn to these programs now that you've incorporated more of those things?
I think so. I think that is part of what makes this program successful. For example, there are students who are inspired by biomedical issues, or pre-med major students who are interested in exploring, for example, issues around autism. Emory has a huge medical school and medical right. program, and we partnered with the Marcus Autism Center last year to bring a New York Times photographer whose work explores autism, and his name is Timothy Archibald. And that event and that partnership with Marcus Autism Center and bringing in Dr. Ami Klein, we had both people who were blown away by Timothy's artwork and how his artwork of his son, who's autistic or is on the autism spectrum, opened up another whole possibility of understanding autism. But then there were also students who were just interested, and community members who were just interested for personal reasons or just for curious reasons about the nature of autism in general. So we had this, we often have these blended communities and this, right. these blended conversations and dialogue that art can be, I really think art can advance in ways that just saying we're going to talk today about, I don't think they do as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier smaller nonprofit community organizations in Atlanta, such as Wonderoot, and you're on the board of directors over at Wonderoot Community Arts Center. What kind of involvement do you have over there at Wonderoot, and how do you feel that even smaller organizations like that can really affect the Atlanta community and the art scene in Atlanta?
In some ways, I think that smaller organizations like that are truly the measure of what's most effective in cities like Atlanta. Larger arts organizations have a role and a function, and we're so fortunate to have them. But in a lot of ways, they miss opportunities to touch people and connect with people on a level that is, they fail to do it on a level that is as personal and that is as engaging in a lot of ways as smaller arts organizations. Larger arts organizations, they are a great platform for exploring artists who have already shaped and formed their identity and exposing and educating us to larger issues and kind of a larger level of accessibility. But it's the smaller arts organization that actually helps shape and form those identities of artists who will become those artists that we find out about once you get to, you know, the high level. And so it is that formation of community and that formation of the artists that is extremely important so that they can ever become someone who would be highlighted in let's say a high end. Cities that don't support that formation of the arts as much as highlighting those artists that are already kind of formed and established are doing themselves and I think the larger world an injustice.
Thank you again for joining me today, Carlton. This has been Art Speak with Burnaway, and we'll see you guys next week.